Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is loading. SteveJonesShow.com audio is sponsored by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Call them at 800-609-9484 or visit them online at REWfinancial.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome, everybody. Thursday edition. By the way, great to hear Rick Weibel on with Mark Lawrence this morning. And today's show is brought to you by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Look, if there's any time in our history, maybe since the 30s, where you really needed to have a good handle on how to take care of your money, it's now. And Rick Weibel does that at REW Insurance and Financial Services. Give Rick a call at 800-609-9484, or you can go online to rewfinancial.com. And I'm at the Chateau, Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, it's 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. 14s are on the lots, and you're talking about a great sales staff to deal with at both locations. So, here we are. Penn State, Ohio State. That's one thing that we've seen in the last 2 years, and that is, I'm talking personally, a great week-to-week value on every regular season game Penn State plays because there's been no bowl game to go to. And now you have Penn State, Ohio State. And we talked about that Penn State, Michigan. Talking two of the signature programs in college football, head-to-head, prime time, 105,000 in Columbus. The only Big Ten opponent that Penn State played every year since the inception of the Nittany Lions with the conference. They're the only opponent they have played every year. And by the way, Michigan and Penn State are the only two opponents that Ohio State's played every year for the last 21 seasons. So that's what makes it fun, and it's become a rivalry because of the last six meetings between the two. The road team has won five of the last six. Amazing. And, of course, this is the last year of the divisional alignment the way it is, but Penn State and Ohio State stay in the same division next year. So, once again, they will continue to play Ohio State on an every-year basis. Penn State is not Ohio State's prime rival. We know Michigan is. But you also have secondary rivalries, and this is their prime secondary rivalry. For Penn State, it's probably the biggest rivalry they have to point to because they don't have a natural rivalry. They tried to kind of wedge and force one with Michigan State, putting it at the end of the schedule. I understand that. You're trying to make something happen. But after all those years of pipping at the end of the schedule, having Michigan State at the end never really generated the juice necessary. And next year when they go to divisional play, they will hit the end of the season and they'll play Michigan State again. But it's going to rotate. It's going to be Michigan State for a couple of years, then it's going to be Maryland for a couple of years, then Rutgers for a couple of years, and then back to Michigan State again. That's how they're going to do it. They're going to rotate those four schools as to a home and away as to who ends the season. And it's tough not having that traditional season ender you can count on. Michigan and Ohio State have that. Purdue has that with Indiana. May not be a game, a mega game, whatever, but in the state of Indiana, it's a big deal. Illinois plays Northwestern on the Friday after Thanksgiving. Nebraska and Iowa now have something good going. You got Wisconsin playing Minnesota. But you don't have, Penn State went all those years with Michigan State. Now it's been Wisconsin the last couple of years, and that's been interesting. But now it's going to be switching off Michigan State to Maryland to Rutgers. I know, Kevin, you're big on rivalries.
I love rivalries. I think there's a magic to them, for lack of a better word right now. There's a little bit of a, no matter what anybody's record is, there's still that interest in winning it. Not an interest in winning it, but there's still that motivation to win it because it's your rival. You know, I see it a lot at the high school level. When you're playing a rival, you could maybe not win a game all year. If you win that game, that's the one that everybody talks about the rest of the year. Or that's the one that everybody remembers from that season.
Ready for a quality pre-owned vehicle? Well, get them before they go to auction at Sunbury Motors. Go to sunburymotors.com and click on pre-auction blowout.
Like a 2011 Ford Explorer Limited, like new, low miles, and Ford certified pre-owned, just $34,995. Clean Carfax and fully serviced 2005 Chevrolet Colorado, $11,487. This 2011 Ford F-150 XLT is one tough truck, but at a friendly price, $24,494. 2011 Dodge Nitro Heat. You'll be the second owner, just $17,995, and a gas-sipping 2012 Ford Focus with lots of remaining warranty, $12,495. Call 570-286-7746.
All come with a Carfax report and our lowest price promise. Pre-auction blowout.
See the full inventory and schedule a test drive at sunburymotors.com.
At the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at our dealership, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
REW Financial believes in the value of total commitment. We are a working family who strives to prove strength of character by staying independent and core focused. REW has a commitment to the community and the financial needs of our clients. Let us design your portfolio or retirement strategy. REW Financial Lewisburg, the power of freedom. Securities and advisory services offered through United Planners Financial Services. Member FINRA, SIPC. REW Financial is a DBA of REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC, and neither are affiliated with United Planners Financial Services.
Well, game one of the World Series last night was a crusher for traditionalists.
Because they had a replay?
No, not a replay. They didn't use replay. The umpires got together and they got it right. And traditionalists was, you know, I mean, you heard Mike Matheny after the game. He's saying, well, I've never seen anything, and this is a precedent setting to do it in the World Series. That's where you started? Mike, I know it went against you, so I understand the emotion because the highest stakes in your game are on the table right now. So that part I get, and I have respect for that and how you feel. But would it have made you feel better to have the blown call benefit you and you win the game? I mean, is that what you want?
I think I actually have his comments here, Steve. Hang on a second.
You rarely see that, you know, especially on the stage like this. But, you know, I think that's good for the game. You know, if everyone can get together and they saw something different and get it right, I think it's, you know, something that should be done all the time.
I think that's Wainwright.
Yeah,
I don't think that's Matheny.
That is not. No, I was going to say, I think that's the wrong button there. So hang on. I do have that, though. So go ahead.
But they got it right. I think what Dana DeMuth was doing is when he was looking at the foot and didn't see the transfer. And part of this is the fact that who was at the plate. David Ortiz is at the plate. And that means the Cardinals, like everyone else, is employing the shift, which means the shortstop is on the second base side of the bag, which means the shortstop, Pete Cosma, is now attempting to go at an angle that is different than what he is used to make a double play. Instead of going with his momentum toward first base, taking the throw, and then going, he's actually retreating to second base, stepping on the bag and throwing. And that caused the problem that you saw. Okay. And Mike Matheny afterward had this to say.
It's not a play I've ever seen before. And I'm pretty sure there were six umpires on the field that had never seen that play before either. And it's a pretty tough time to debut that over ruled call in the World Series. Now, I get that trying to get the right call, I get that. Just a tough one to swallow.
Now, how about the fact that your team defensively looked atrocious?
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, but that bothers me, though. I mean, that's old, the old-school baseball mentality. And believe me, I love tradition like anybody else. But I'm sorry. Hey, if it was the other way around and it was Steve and Drew, and everyone knows I'm a Red Sox fan, if it's Steve and Drew going over and the ball goes past him, you would not hear me on the air today saying, oh, my goodness, the Red Sox, umpires don't overturn calls. I've been telling you they got it right.
But that's what they're supposed to do.
Okay, here's the job description. What is the one and only thing in the job description for an umpire or a referee?
Make the right call?
Get it right. That's all you have to do. Get it right. That's your job. After that, all the other stuff is secondary, and in the end, they got it right.
But there's a reason this is in the rule book where a call can be overturned by another umpire. That's why it's there. It's not like this is something that has never been done in the history of baseball.
Well, the other part, too, is I think somebody for the Cardinals said, well, look, shouldn't they be looking at their own bases? Okay, I understand that, except the left field and right field umpire and the home plate umpire had only that to look at.
Right, they don't have bases to worry about.
Exactly, they're watching. So in other words, the left field umpire and the right field umpire both had a perfect view of it angle-wise that he never even came close to catching the ball.
And guess what? It's the home plate umpire's responsibility to look at that.
Now, the next part of this is that they get it right. And at that point, traditional baseball people, I'm sorry. Your game is losing ratings because of archaic stuff. Right? Monday Night Football outdrew Game 1 of the World Series last night, and the Monday Night Football game was atrocious. It did. And it's because you got to get yourself out of the mode of, well, back in the 40s, they wouldn't have done that. You're right. Back in the 40s, they would not have done that. They'd have made a stupid mistake and moved on. The game has a pace to it. We've talked about it, gone through it ad nauseum. I understand that. But most people... Okay, what they did last night was really good for the game. And if there was one that later in the series, it goes against the Red Sox, and they talk about it, and it turns out they say, fine, I'm going to tell you right now, it's good for the game. It's good that they got it right. And he said, look, we were unanimous in what we saw. Okay. They didn't go to a replay. They didn't put up on the board. They didn't look at the scoreboard, any of that stuff. They got it right. And that's a good thing. Game actually advanced in a direction last night that was positive. It's just when I read columns from traditionalists, I sit back and say, I'm sorry, do you get what you're watching? My goodness.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Get an update on the playoff picture in high school football in District 4 coming up at 4:06 from Kevin. Get everybody up to date on that.
What if I'm not prepared?
Yeah, right.
You're right. That's like saying you're not going to be calling the Penn State game on Saturday. It's right. Not going to happen.
No, exactly right. So, yeah. There we are. We'll get you up to date on that. Should be great. Looking forward to it very much. But Kevin will do that at 4:06. And as he rolls through that, it should be interesting the way everything's lining up now, because this is the time of the year where it's legit and real. At least I think.
Well, it's funny that you still can't, in some of these classes, you still can't project who's going to have a home game already. I mean, week 9 and 10 coming up, and you still, home games are still up for grabs in some of these divisions.
Right. Oh, exactly. So, we'll see how that plays out. We're going to take a little diversion for a moment, because a great college sport. We love football. We love our basketball, baseball, so forth. But doggone, women's volleyball has just really taken off. And the Big Ten probably has the number one women's volleyball conference in the country. Not probably, it is. And Mike Wolf from Big Ten Network is joining us from Chicago. Mike calls a lot of the volleyball on BTN. Mike, welcome. It is great to have you on board with us.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate you having me on.
Mike, you are broadcasting matches in what is unquestionably the deepest volleyball conference in America. What is it for you? What's it like on a night-in and night-out grind?
I'd say night-in, night-out, any of the coaches would tell you the same thing, that you have no idea what to expect from this conference because there's so much talent. You know, every year the Big Ten is clearly the best conference in women's volleyball, but this year more so than any, you can go into a match and have no clue who's actually going to come out with a win, whether it's Penn State playing the bottom of the conference and, say, playing a team like Wisconsin, as they did a couple of weeks ago, where they didn't feel like they played very well and were fortunate to win in straight sets. And you have these matches that could easily go either way, and it just tells you how deep the league is, as you said, Steve.
Penn State obviously has been the one with a target on it, on its back for a long time. To you, when you watch Russ Rose's team, Mike, what makes them year in and year out, despite changes here and there in personnel, what continues to make them special?
Well, Russ has been doing this for such a long time, and you see the ball control for this team. Typically, they have a great libero back there who also works with the rest of the back row players to make sure that they're putting a good pass to all the talented setters they've had in the past few years, the talented players on the outside and the middle. But it all starts with that first contact, and I think you see it from Dominique Gonzalez. You go back to Alyssa DiRico. Even beyond that, Kalina Walters, Kalina Davidson now, who is on the bench as an assistant coach. They've always had a very good ball control team, and that makes a difference. And at times when they have struggled, it's been when passing hasn't been there and some of the errors that can result from bad passing. And I think you see a Russ Rose coach team usually out there doing the fundamentals well, and they've done that throughout the course of the time that Russ has really had so much success.
At the same time, Nebraska, of course, added in 2-3 years ago, which, of course, then added to the depth of the conference. What does John Cook's team have?
Well, John Cook's team this year versus other years, I mean, this is kind of a hodgepodge for him. You have a wide variety of new players on this team. You have the two Rolfson twins who arguably are the two most talented players to come out of high school in a long time. Cook recruited them back when they were in 7th and 8th grade and got the commitment from them before they were even in high school. And those two players are going to be phenomenal, and you see it throughout the course of their time already this year and as the season goes on. But I'd say Nebraska, they own the state of Nebraska in bringing in that talent. And then as you saw, they bring in players from outside, players from even other schools, because they had the transfer players in Mary Paul Miller and Kelsey Robinson this year. And when you put an SEC player of the year with her setter coming from Tennessee, it makes them better this year than I would say some people expected, because Nebraska lost, you know, 4 senior All-Americans from a year ago, and they had to replace Lauren Cook, the daughter of John Cook, in the setter position. And they've had some of their own struggles this year, but still they can pull off some of the big wins. And I think by the end of the season, you're going to see Nebraska be at the level they've been over the course of their history.
What team has been a surprise to you so far?
You have to say Michigan State has been a surprise. But Wisconsin as well, I'd say Wisconsin is maybe a bigger surprise, because with a brand-new head coach in Kelly Sheffield, and a new player in Lauren Carlini, who's the setter, who's the number one overall recruit coming out of high school, they were not expected to do much. They had not reached the NCAA tournament for each of the past five seasons. I think they're on their way after beating Michigan State this past Sunday. So Wisconsin has been a surprise, especially with all their health concerns. They've had a lot of players out. And I think for them to be in the position that they are in the Big Ten Conference at this point, that's huge for that Wisconsin program going forward. But Michigan State, the way they started, you know, they went 6-0 to start Big Ten play. They're running a 6-2, so they have so many hitters involved, and they actually get to have all that talent out there on the floor, and you have to have versatile players to run a 6-2. I think Michigan State has shown that they have the athletes to run a 6-2 probably better than anybody else in the conference. Last night we saw Purdue run the 6-2 very well, but Michigan State, they've looked phenomenal. They had an off week this past weekend with a lot of errors, but I expect them to be in the race for Big Ten title as the season goes on.
Okay. You look at the setters in this conference, the quarterbacks of these teams, two, three that stand out to you right away that you say, you know what, the kind of quarterback that can win not just a Big Ten title but a national title for you.
I mean, Micah Hancock, obviously. As you've known and you've seen over the past few years, she's grown as a setter. I think the favorite thing that I heard from Russ Rose a couple of years ago when he talked about Micah Hancock was that, you know, she's really a hitter who's playing the setter position. Right. But she's not tall enough to get out there and be on the outside at 5'11" to be able to put balls away as a hitter. But you still see her put the swing on the ball at the net, have that left-handed swing. And what she's done setting this team, it's improved throughout each year. And I think, I go back to last season, when you look in that, the national semifinal, when she goes down with that injury, if she doesn't roll her ankle under the net, you're talking about another Penn State national title. I don't see them not beating Texas in the national championship match. And I think that made the difference without Hancock at 100%. Some people question whether or not leaving her in there was the right idea, but she's the player who got you there, so Penn State stuck with her. And it's unfortunate that an injury like that can change the course of an entire season because, you know, they were on their way to a national championship last season. The other centers that probably stand out to me, I really do like Lauren Carlini. She's just a freshman at Wisconsin, as I talked about. I think that she has the potential to be one of the best centers that we'll see in the Big Ten over the next few years. And even on the U.S. national team, that's her goal. And I think people have the expectation that she will compete at some point to be a member of the U.S. national team in the center position. And then, you know, Val Nickel is a center who's also hitting as well for Purdue. She's got a lot of talent, and I like what I've seen from her. Kristen Kelsey in Michigan State, I think she's got a great personality, and as a senior, she's the one that that team looks to. And I'm sure I'm forgetting another talented setter out there because there are so many in the Big Ten Conference, but if I have to pick one, I'd go with Micah Hancock.
The atmosphere is like, it just seems like the sport is just, especially the Wednesday night game of the week, it seems like the sport's popularity has really been growing. What have you seen? Because you go venue to venue. What's impressed you about the atmospheres in the buildings?
Well, I'll tell you that I think we've seen at the Big Ten Network, the atmospheres have been incredible. Even last night at Purdue inside the Boiler Box, I mean, they sold it out on a Tuesday night. You know, you have Tuesday and Wednesday night, you can get a lot of people who come out to watch volleyball, and it's only growing with the success of the Big Ten Conference. So many good teams across the nation making it even better. But you look at Nebraska, and they have their new facility in the revamped Bob Devaney Center, and you have 8,000 fans there every single match, and there's just nothing that compares to it. Now, the one thing that I would say is looking at the student sections, I think over the past few years you've seen, you know, Penn State's always had a good and involved student section, but I've been a little disappointed that the student section for the Nittany Lions has not traveled to away matches. You have Purdue and Illinois, two schools that have never won a national championship, never had the success that Penn State has had. Those students will travel in bunches to schools across the Big Ten, not just the close schools. They'll be at Penn State matches if they're the Illini, the Spike Squad, and then the Boiler Block Party. That travel, to me, has been very impressive, and I would expect that as the Wrecking Crew, the newly anointed Wrecking Crew, gets going, they're going to actually get to the point where they can compete with those student sections in Illinois and Purdue. But the one other thing I would mention is that, Steve, I think, you know, we were a little surprised in the last home match that we did at Rec Hall, the Penn State-Minnesota match, the top 10 matchup, and there always have been good crowds at Rec Hall, but we did not see the sellout crowd that we expected, or at least maybe not a sellout, but a full Rec Hall that we expected when we were broadcasting that match. And I think, you know, that was a bit disappointing with all the success that Penn State volleyball has had over the years. There's no reason that Nebraska, they have more capacity, there's no reason that Penn State volleyball can't draw to almost sell out matches every single night.
I agree with that. I think part of Penn State's drawing formula has been over the years great teams, which Russ has, entertaining, which Russ has. But if you put it on a Friday night or a Saturday night around a football weekend and extra people are in town, I think that sometimes that's the difference between a really good crowd and a great crowd.
Absolutely. And actually, I'd go back to, you know, a couple weeks ago, or I guess a week ago with Wisconsin in the Penn State-Michigan game. And, you know, that game runs long, so people can't get over to watch the Penn State-Wisconsin volleyball match. But I talked to assistant coach Steve Aird, and he said at one point in the match, there was just this loud cheer, and no one knew what was happening on the floor until they found out, you know, the football team had won in overtime against Michigan. And at that point, the team went on a rally, winning, I think, 8 or 9 of the next points. And so that atmosphere can make a difference on the floor. So you've got to have, you know, the scheduling that hopefully works out to get as many people there as possible. But you need that crowd to help out a Penn State team or any team in the Big Ten.
The coaches probably wouldn't want it. But how would you feel down the road if somebody said, you know what, how about if we have a Big Ten postseason volleyball tournament?
You know, that's an interesting conversation to be had. And I agree. I think coaches probably aren't interested in it. But I think it would be phenomenal with the crowds, as we talk about in the Big Ten Conference, to get everyone together to play a tournament and especially have, you know, maybe 2 or 3 matches in a day. It would be exhilarating. It would be a lot of fun to see these teams and these crowds really get in, and I'm sure there'd be some very tight matches that would have some moments that you would really be unforgettable. And I think with the addition of, you know, Maryland and Rutgers, there's a potential that going up to 14 teams that a Big Ten tournament might make sense. However, there's been a lot of pride in winning a Big Ten title in the regular season, and if you diminish that, that might take something away, and I think that goes back to what you're talking about with coaches not necessarily wanting to make that change.
Mike, I did the Atlantic 10 for years. In fact, they did every game Penn State played in the Atlantic 10. They had a tournament.
Mm-hmm. Okay?
First got in the Big Ten, no tournaments. All about winning the regular season championship. You'd be amazed how much fun the men's basketball tournament is now. So I can tell you, it's amazing what progress can mean, you know?
Absolutely. You know, I would love it. Personally, I want to sit there and have consecutive days of great volleyball and be able to see all that play out. But, you know, they don't leave that decision up.
Oh, no. That's just a good conversation thing just to have some fun with. You know,
exactly.
I mean, Bo Schembechler, the Big Ten championship was the most important thing. It's because Bo didn't win national championships. Go ahead.
Mike, you've been around a lot of sports, volleyball, baseball, women's basketball, that don't get the recognition of a football or men's basketball. You mentioned Rutgers and, of course, Maryland joining the conference. What's that going to mean for some of these other sports?
Well, the first thing that I think of is lacrosse, because you add Maryland in lacrosse, and you're going to have a Big Ten men's lacrosse conference, Big Ten Women's Lacrosse Conference, not this year, but the following year, that's going to be absolutely huge. You bring in Maryland, and then you have the associate member in Johns Hopkins. You're going to see a growth in lacrosse, not only from the programs that already exist. I think you'll see some other programs that may consider putting together a Division I men's lacrosse team. I know Indiana has a club team, so that could be in the future as well. And you add Maryland, and you're immediately going to have a huge audience for Big Ten lacrosse. And then there's been so much success in Big Ten women's lacrosse, and you have Maryland and Northwestern. That rivalry has already been great. They played in national title, national semifinal matches. And as that goes on, I think you're going to see every year that will be a matchup that any lacrosse fan does not want to miss. Yeah. Because Northwestern and Maryland together playing in women's lacrosse, they own more national championships combined than anyone. Those are the two dominant programs in women's lacrosse. So I'm excited to see what happens. And again, that goes back to personally the fact that I get to cover a lot of men's and women's lacrosse games, and that's going to be great for the Big Ten Conference, just as Big Ten hockey is great for the conference.
It's also great for the sports themselves. The Big Ten brand brings some weight to it. I mean,
absolutely.
And I think that brand means something to each of the sports nationally. Mike, thanks so much.
You'll see that even as it goes on. You're going to have more people who are drawn with BTN covering so many of these games, and then also seeing how good the Big Ten can be.
Mike, thanks so much, bud.
Thank you, Steve. Enjoyed it.
Anytime. Mike Wolf from BTN. We appreciate Mike's time. Come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us on this Thursday. Brought to you by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Give Rick a call at 800-609-9484. Go online to REWfinancial.com. Here at the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. 406, Kevin goes through the playoff picture in District 4. Gives you an idea of where things shake down at the moment and who might be in the host positions. And we'll do that at 4:06. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have Lauren Crispell, sideline reporter for us. We're also going to look at fantasy football tomorrow with Mike McGregor. Corey Geiger is a part of the show tomorrow as well.
By the way, word in on Beltran, he has a severe rib bruise. He is day-to-day. X-rays did come back negative.
All right. Well, day-to-day means he's not playing today.
That's probably what it means, yeah.
Yeah,
heck of a
playing.
Catch, though.
Oh, it was a great catch. He took away a grand slam last night when he did that. So he will not play in all likelihood tonight. Day-to-day means that tonight's not the night. Could mean that he plays in St. Louis, though, the two games, possibly three there.
If that game were closer, I've heard a lot of people talking about it in the last 24 hours. If that game were closer, would Cincinnati be in a better position? Because right now it seems like they are not in a good position, even though it's only one game in.
Cincinnati.
I'm sorry, yeah, St. Louis. I was thinking of Cincinnati. St. Louis. I mean, St. Louis did not play well. They had their ace on the mound. I mean, it seemed almost like the game was disastrous for them in every possible way. And how do you come back from that, even though it's only one game?
Momentum in baseball is as follows. Who's your starting pitcher the next day? Michael Wacha gets the ball tonight for St. Louis, who's been phenomenal in the postseason. An 0.45 ERA. But John Lackey gets the ball tonight for the Red Sox, a guy with a great postseason history and showed it in both the Tampa Bay and Detroit series. He pitched, especially against Detroit, he pitched extremely well. So baseball's a little bit different. I think you have some carryover and momentum in basketball. There's a little bit of carryover and momentum in hockey. Baseball, it's still on a day-by-day basis. But they didn't play well last night. Not having Beltran has been their X-factor offensively. He has been the X-factor offensively for them. He has been the difference maker. Not having him, that is a bigger blow than what happened last night.
But if the Bo Sox get to Wacha, and this is a 2-0 series for Boston, that is almost the kiss of death for St. Louis. I don't know if they can win 3 and 4 with their pitching.
Yeah, but Peavy goes in 3, and he's not bad. The Red Sox don't know what they're doing in 4. Buchholz is not quite right. You notice their roster. They put Felix Dubrunt on the roster, who was a starting pitcher for them during the regular season. Interesting move because he was not a part of the mix earlier. Now they've got him in the mix because I think they're considering using him as the game 4 starter. Then we'll see how it plays out after that. But the Wacha thing is big tonight. They really need him to pitch the way he's been pitching. If the Red Sox get to him and win tonight, that does put a big onus on St. Louis. It really does. It really does. But we'll see. Because the Cardinals really banked, and I mean really banked, on Wainwright and Wacha at the front to set the tone for the series.
They were figuring to go 2-0 coming out of Boston.
Right. That's what they were figuring with those two guys on the mound. If the Red Sox leave with a 2-0 advantage, that is a big swing because they've been able to get to two guys that people have not been able to get to. All right, news next here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.